Chapter 26. Gunner.
"It's not for sale," I says. "Who said anything about a sale?" the rapt man asks. "It's a holy trust." That one was a purpose, and he don't correct me, so he knows about Captain Gunner. Ergot, he's crafty. I'll have to hold my coins a four square in my fists around this one. But I know how to deal with Connors. He's all swaddled like a babe, like he's got a skin-sloughing disease, maybe, but I think he's well after all. He's accosted me here outside Lee's Watering Hole, my favourite tavern on the swollen teat that is Big Jasper. He was waiting for me, and I'm feeling a bit too boozy for this. "I don't believe in holy or unholy," says he. "I believe in having the best." "What's that to me?" I asks. "I want to show you a ship, best girl on the Cerulean Sea, or any other." "Every captain or owner selling a ship says the same," I says. "Everyone says it. Some of them believe it, but one of them's right." "The odds that one is you are blinky indeed," I say, but I can't help being intrigued. "Take a look for yourself," he says. "I'll let you come aboard, armed as you will, and you can examine it as you will." "What's the hook?" I asks. "No hook. A game. I'll tell you more after you decide if she's worth your time. Though there's not been a sailor worth his salt yet who scorned the golden mean." There's his bait. I've heard of this boat. The breathless wonder and slobbering are enough to turn a man's stomach and his eyes. "I'll take a look-see." I wouldn't mind being the man to disprove the silliness and lies about what a wonder she is. It's not long to her place at the dock. She's a new Elysian galleass, but I see the stories were true. She's bone white, but with a golden sheen to her skin, like a pale blood forester lady riding your hips sweaty at sunset. "A Bornean teak?" I ask. "Lightweight and stronger than any other wood known to man." "Too porous for decking. Your ship is shite. She'll warp and sink for a long night." "But I don't leave, and he don't defend her." "She's really imbibed with bright water?" I asks. "Just enough to fill the pores in the wood and just on the hull. No need to add weight where it's unnecessary. The yellow luxin imbuing the wood is segmented, though, so the wood can still flex. I'll warn you, it does mean you have to hire a bright water drafter every 10 years. A good one. They told me 20 years, but shipwrights. Would swear their own mother was a virgin before selling her to be a poxy captain's butt-boy." I agree. He says, "I'm untrusting myself, so I hired my own yellow drafter to look her over. She estimated 10 years. Bonus is that with the yellow luxin coating, barnacles won't grow on the hull, which makes it faster still." "Eh? Means you can't keel haul a man?" "Of course you still could, but with no barnacles, he might actually live through it, which has its own advantages." He says nothing again. "No barnacles means you don't have to clean the barnacles off, and that's one of the more time-intensive and costly bits of maintenance for any ship." "How many guns?" He laughs, and it makes his bandages slide some. I can see he's almost as night-skinned as me. Older man, though, from how he moves at times. Skinny. "You're familiar with the work of Phineas Vicini?" Here's where his lies are going to get his lines wrapped round his legs. I know Finn well. "Some," I says, "this from his workshop or stamped by his hand." "Master Vicini has quit working," the man says. "He let his daughters take over his shop." Everyone knows that. Guess that's not the lie to trip him, then. "They're good, but others are their equals," I grumble. "Maybe one day the youngest will be her father's rival, maybe. Guns from his daughters aren't quite the braggery you'd like to claim, though." He adjusts his wrappings patiently. "I'm not bragging of guns from his daughters. I convinced Finn to go back to work one last time. The girls didn't want him to, said he'd ruin his health, and he may well have done so. He's spent a year on this."
"Pah! How'd you do that? I heard he swore to that harpy he wedded he'd never—" "His wife passed on 2 years back. His daughters were as adamant he not take the work, but then I offered him something he couldn't resist."
"And what's that?" I ask. "That old goat Rogero weren't swayed by neither women, wealth, nor wine. What could you offer him?"
Like the insidious stench of wine shits after shore leave, a smug aura surrounds the bandaged man.
"I told him the cannons were for you."
Finn had spent a year, with all his forgers and smiths and cast-iron men and engravers and potboys and apprentices, his workshop belching smoke day and night. "For me?" It knocks my knees a bit weak, to be forthright. It's one thing to shout at the world that you're the best. I've been doing that since it weren't true. It's a whole nother fish for the best in the world to acknowledge you as the best, too. It's like finding another barrel of brandy in the hold 2 days after you run dry and got the shakes.
"How many?"
40 guns, various sizes. Some with parts my cannon caster and gunner together couldn't even make sense of. Finn laughed and said you'd know what they were for, or figure it out, or if, after all I'd promised, if the guns weren't actually for you, that we could go sodomize ourselves. I'm not sure what that means, but he's a ship owner. They like fancy talk to keep them company while they sit on their piles of money and stupid. It sounds like old Finn gave him hell, though, and that makes me happier than the first lovelorn sailor on shore leave through the door at an understaffed brothel. "I don't believe you," I says. "Who's manning her?" "No one," he says. "I fired them all. I was given to understand that smugglers and pirates like to hire their own crews, and given that I may be handing the ship over to you, I wasn't planning on paying for a crew in the meantime." "Handing it over? So he doesn't mean to pay me to captain her on some errand?" "I told you before, it ain't for sale, nor trade neither. Captain Gunner is integrated. Integrated. Has integrated? That ain't right. Damns, though, a sword for a boat. I got little use for one, and many for the other, no matter what that nattering old Hollum said. Has integrity, yes, you're known for that." There's a twinkle in his eye that I don't like. Like I amuse him, poncy little butt boy. I ought to jam my thumbs through them eyes. "The answer's no, then, and you know it, and I know it." But I don't move. He doesn't either. "A look isn't going to harm anything. At least would let you know if I was telling you the truth about those cannons." A long moment. Then I say, "I owe it to that old goat, I suppose. Just a look-see." "Of course." Captain Gunner is renowned for his shooting, of course, but he ain't no fool about a ship, neither. This ship is all first rate. The last crew got a bit sloppy about some things, if you look in the corners for grime, and Gunner's never allowed that hard crease to be folded on the edge of the furled sail. Looks nice ashore, but gives the cloth a weak place that will eventually rip. Most of her, though, is simply astonishing. Master Creepy gives me a lantern and stays topside. "No interest in seeing it again," he says, "and he don't want me nervous with him behind me. Gunner inspects her for half an hour. She's a dream." And then Gunner goes to the gun deck. The cannons are unmistakably Finn's work, but instead of on wheels, these cannons are on tracks. There are knobs and dials and articulated sights. I intuitively understand some of it. It's made so one gunner, the best gunner, can walk up and down a full row for a broadside and make sure that every cannon is aimed exactly as he wishes and fire each exactly when he wishes, separately or all at once. In the old days, I could train my crew for it, but I could only aim one cannon perfectly myself. Here, if I understand aright, one man could direct his crews like another set of limbs, them doing the dumber work of swabbing and reloading, and Gunner doing the artist bit of aiming and booming. On the forecastle, in pride of place, is a cannon engraved with a name like a punch to my belly. I sink down beside her, filled with awe and wonder and hate. Her engraving reads, "Ceres," or "The Compelling Argument." She is the utter pinnacle of the cannon maker's craft, a culverin extraordinary near 4 paces long, with a bore wider than my own spread hand and shot as big as my balls. With this masterpiece, I could make my own legends. I spend 10 minutes with her before I go up and spit on her before I go, then rub that spit in down the long barrel as if it were my own shaft. Guile's sword for this ship? The ship's worth 100 swords, no matter how bejeweled and begemmed. 100 at least. I must have this ship. And I can't. When I stole the sword, that prophet told me the sea would run with my blood if I lost the blade. I'm not a superstitious man, but I'm no fool neither. How hard is it to keep a sword, I thought. Gunner's honour, I tell the man, wrapped as a leper to hide his identity, is not for sale. Not a sale, no, I would never besmirch Gunner's name by suggesting so, but I can see the man's mask tug at the corners of his face as he grins beneath it. Even God plays dice.